Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio as we reach around the world to our listeners in Australia, New Zealand, England, Ireland, Papua New Guinea, and across North America. It's great to have you along with us. Our prayers off to Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson, who are usually our technician and studio producers, but they have been struck by tornadoes in the state of Ohio, so they have no power. So we're so blessed to have Billy Willard jump on board to be the producer tonight. We really appreciate that. As always, manning the Wild World News Desk, the honorable, distinguished, and always prompt, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson. We just went through 20 days of nonstop rain.
Yes, we did.
And unfortunately, that headed Melissa and Wayne's way.
Yeah, well, they got a lot of big wind. We saw that in the northern part of Indiana, but luckily, we just had a nice storm yesterday, so we're so blessed. And we're also blessed because our guest tonight, Alexandra Holzer, her dad, Hans Holzer, was the original ghost hunter. We anticipate a very interesting and maybe a scary hour. So, Dr. Day, please do the show with the lights on for us tonight, if you don't mind.
Okay, I'll do that.
The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Wildlife Educational Services, and our website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, tells all about our wildlife rescue work that we do, also our wildlife education programs, and how you can order the download from Shelley Leibowitz SRI Records of the Larry Batson Wild World Music Collection. For a donation, you can receive 4 CDs worth of music, incredible rock and roll, country, blues, jazz. It's all there on the Larry Batson's Wild World Music Collection. It makes it possible for our program to be on Blog Talk Radio.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for July 11th. Now, wear a hat if you go outside in Bismarck, North Dakota.
Uh-oh.
Yep, about 30,000 white American pelicans have returned to nest on Chase Lake National Wildlife Reserve.
Oh, my God.
Now, the island is a little over 4,000 acres and is guano rich.
Well, we need to take our shovel and bucket and go there.
And help them out a little bit. Yeah, so wear a hat if you go outside.
Have you ever been to Bismarck, North Dakota?
Yes, I have.
I have, too, and it's still there.
Yeah.
But that's a great story, though.
Along with 30,000 white pelicans.
Oh, my Lord.
Well, you never know what's going to come in on the tide. Laguna Beach, California. A rare jellyfish has arrived at 1,000 Steps Beach, with some people suffering stings all over their entire bodies. Now, swimmers came ashore with black membranes clinging to them from the jellyfish as they broke up in the surf.
Wow.
Now, from the color, the jellyfish may be the rare black jellies.
That's not good.
That's not good. And I particularly hate the black jellies because they taste like licorice.
You know, it's too bad you have to apologize this early into our program.
You're right. That's the second story, and I apologize already.
With such a distinguished guest we have tonight.
All right. We've got traffic problems in Oregon. Medford.
Mm-hmm.
2 sheep on the loose were captured after nearly a year on the lam. Yeah, the sheep had been crossing Interstate 5 and interfering with traffic for almost an entire year.
Really? That's too bad.
Captured, now they're home and everything is good.
Oh, well, that's great.
Well, we're on the road again in Oregon, Central Point. Traffic was slowed to a crawl by a large turtle.
Oh.
Now, several drivers called the police, and they were worried that the turtle was going to be run over, but the turtle did make it to the other side of the road where he was going to a Shell station. I know.
You're really outdoing yourself tonight.
I know. All right, we've got some sad news from Lander, Wyoming.
Oh.
The Department of State Parks plans to hold an event July 20th to commemorate the last bighorn ram that lived in Sinks Canyon.
Mm.
Now, officials called the ram, I'm sorry, but it's his real name, Bam Bam.
Really?
The department is trying to raise $5,000 to have a full-body taxidermy mount and a diorama about bighorns installed in the Park Visitor Center.
I wonder why they don't just reintroduce them.
Well, that'll be down the road. They're going to try to do that. But for now, they're going to set up a little thing to let people know, to educate them like you do about the bighorn rams.
Did your staff find out exactly what had happened to Bam Bam?
No, we have no information on Bam Bam's...
Keep us up to date.
Yeah, we will. All right, now here's some good news out of Pierre, South Dakota. There will be no sage-grouse hunting season this year.
Oh, good.
The Game, Fish, and Parks Commission has decided that no hunting season will be held this fall because of the birds' population has fallen in recent years.
Well, good for them.
All right, well, while we're not hunting grouse, let's not hunt sandhill cranes. Yes, Nashville, Tennessee. The Tennessee Fish and Wildlife Commission will again consider instituting a sandhill crane hunt. Yeah. Now, state wildlife officials will take public comment, and the commission will decide whether to allow crane hunting when it meets in August. This is the second time in 3 years that the agency has pondered such a proposal.
According to my memory, they were almost extinct at one time.
That's right. So we want a little help from the public. If you have a few minutes, Tennessee Fish and Wildlife Commission would love to hear from you.
Yes. They're going to hear from me, I think.
Well, always check with your local hunting and fishing laws. St. Joseph, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Conservation officials issued citations to 16 people accused of illegally catching catfish. Yeah, the Department of Conservation said in a news release that the misdemeanor citations were issued for hand fishing. You know, known as noodling or grabbing.
Yeah, they've got a couple television shows on about that.
Yeah, I don't quite understand it.
Well, you don't use bait, you don't use a fishing pole, you just use your hands and you feel around the rocks and logs until you feel a catfish, then you...
Have you ever been horned by a catfish?
Oh, yeah. Then you put your finger in a catfish's mouth and he bites down and you pull the fish out. That's how they catch them.
Yeah, catfish have teeth, too, so... Yeah.
They do.
All right, well, just check with your local hunting and fishing laws before you decide to go and catch some catfish.
Okay.
All right, we're lucky to be alive. Geneva, Florida. Andrew Hudson, 17, was treated for puncture wounds on his head after being bitten by an alligator while swimming in the Big Little Econ State Forest. Yes, now Hudson kicked what he thought was a log, but nearly a 10-foot-long alligator came up behind him and jerked him underwater.
Well, yeah, I got kicked by the guy.
So what's the moral of this story? Don't kick an alligator?
Yeah, don't kick an alligator, especially in his own house.
That's right. How are your alligators doing this year?
They're doing quite well. They're kind of can't figure out this wacky summer we've had so far, but they're doing great.
Any word on the alligator up at the pyramids?
Well, they seem to think that it wasn't an alligator that was sighted, but they think it was a mother duck with her ducklings swimming behind her.
Oh, I see. That would be really easy to confuse a mother with her ducks and an alligator.
Yeah, that would be real, real easy to do.
Yeah.
So, no, they haven't
been on time tonight. Oh, we're not doing too bad. Well, I better hurry it along.
Okay.
All right. Well, the local news, as you know, we lost Bob Carter.
Oh, we did. And I have to tell you, for the people that that don't live in central Indiana do not know him, but he was the host of a horror movie night that we grew up with here in central Indiana, and we called him Sammy Terry. And Henry, I don't know if you knew this, but I was actually on the show one time.
Yes, I saw that show.
Oh, you did? Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So I didn't have the offer.
You took some creatures with you to the show?
Oh, I did a full Wolfman makeup job, and we took snakes and lizards and spiders and all sorts of stuff, and we had just a great... But what was wild here, it would air at Friday night at 11:30, and he would co-host, some of the greatest monster films ever shown. But it was pre-taped at Tuesday at 7:30 in the morning, so... That's kind of weird to try and be scary at 7:30 in the morning on a Tuesday, but
yeah.
He did a pretty good job of it.
He did. He entertained us for nearly 30 years.
Yes, he did.
We are going to miss Sammy Terry.
Yes, we are.
All right, now it's time for the Wild World Facts of the Day. Are you ready?
I think so. I'm sitting down.
All right. Lizards communicate by doing push-ups.
That's true.
A newborn kangaroo is about 1 inch in length.
That's true, too.
A bullfrog is the only animal that never sleeps.
That's 2-3.
All right. Now we're going to close out with women blink nearly twice as much as men.
Really?
And I will reiterate one more time, 80% of people hit by lightning are men.
Is that true?
That's true, and I've thought about this for a long time. The only thing I can figure is men have a higher iron content than women do. That's the only thing that makes any sense to me, but I don't really know.
Hmm.
But that's the Wild World News for July 11th.
Well, once again, a wonderful job done by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana. We always appreciate the efforts they put out. We also want to thank We Want You Cottages in Chautauqua Lake, New York. What a fantastic place to spend your vacation. Peter and Kathy Weimer, they do a great job. These beautiful cabins right on the banks of Chautauqua Lake. It's like an ocean, everybody. Musky fishing, walleye, perch, it's all there. Look at their website, www.wewanchu.com. And also, the Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo. We know he was the promoter behind it. He's got a wonderful video that you can download. And that's at Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo. He helps make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. She's following in the footsteps of her father, Hans Holzer, the original ghost hunter. He's carried on his legacy, and we will be talking about Amityville and other cases that may lead to a very scary hour, we hope. Our guest tonight, all the way from New York, we feel so honored, Alexandra Holzer. Good evening, Alexandra.
Good evening, Larry. How are you?
We're doing great. How are you doing?
Oh, just peachy, thanks.
Oh. Well, it's fantastic to have you on this program. In fact, before we even get into the ghost stuff,
yeah.
You're involved with a lot of pet rescues as well.
I am. And it's funny because when I was listening to the news,
mm-hmm.
I was reminded when I was probably, I'd say 18 or 19, and I was dating this boy out in Long Island, and he liked to fish a lot, and I hated that, of course, because I thought, oh, my God, you're hurting the fish. But anyway, I digress. And there was a pelican that was hurt, and I remember, making him, help pick him up, but not to touch him because, we were always taught you don't touch the animal if it's wounded, especially you don't know the germ factor and all that stuff, or
right.
You can hurt the animal, in the back of the truck and drove it to a local shelter to try to save, I think it was a crane. I'm not like a bird person, but I just knew
sure.
We had to save it, but I think it was a crane because it was out in Long Island, and we drove it to a local shelter to save it, and I think he survived. So this is just like going back, and I used to pick, cats off the street of Manhattan and take them home. And my father, Mr. Ghost Hunter, would have a fit because we already had rescue cats in the house.
Yes.
And his whole thing was, you can't mix the two, in the accent that he had. And I'm like, yes, you can. And so we did. But then he made me go and take them to a shelter to get homes, which, of course, I was petrified because, as you know, with rescues, you know, they're really hard to place in homes, and everybody wants the kitten or the puppy, and nobody wants the adult cat or dog. So it was just really, you know, my whole life. So, I'm still doing it. I mean, we have rescues. We always do. If one dies, you know, we get another. I mean, you just, you know, you recycle life, but you
sure.
save life. You don't buy life, you know, so.
So how many dogs and cats do you have at home now?
Not many, and certainly not enough, but I am, you know, not allowed. So it's kind of like we have the kids, and, you know, I have a limit. You know, it's kind of like you get cut off at the second drink. Kind of Holzer gets cut off at, like, two dogs. That's it. So basically I've been threatened. We have a rescue dachshund, and, of course, he's got ADD. He's the most difficult breed.
They are.
Just ridiculous. And, you know, so the rule is when he goes, then we can have another. And then we have a Lhasa who's just, she's so great.
Oh, they are.
We lost a Shih Tzu. She was very difficult. So we have two, and it's going to stay that way for a while. But it doesn't mean I can't, you know, help other people. And so that's what I've been doing and bringing about awareness that, you know, they're part of the family and, you know, they need homes and, you know, try to, you know, take the adult ones. And, you know, we always took the animals that had problems. Like our Shih Tzu needed medication, you know. I had a cat I took off the street in Manhattan that turned out to be an epileptic cat, you know. So, yay me. So, I mean, ghosts are nothing. The animals will kill you.
Oh, so. You're preaching to the choir.
Well, you should know, Larry. Obviously, you have bigger and badder things where you are, of course, and I bow down to you for what you do. I mean,
well,
it's just, you know.
My wife still cringes when the phone rings because they'll say, we've spotted another alligator in a river or lake here.
Oh, better you than me, though.
Yeah, well, we've got, I think there's a dozen of them out there right now.
Wow.
Anywhere from a foot to 8 feet long.
All
rescues.
Wow.
From
Aww.
Rivers and lakes. But that's gone down a little bit since the crocodile hunter passed away because, believe it or not, I think he inspired people to have alligators. Don't ask me.
Oh, my gosh.
Why. Well, what was that show that Beretta that was on years ago with Robert Blake?
Right.
Yep.
He had a cockatoo. And for the time that show was on, cockatoos were so popular, but he didn't tell people that he was almost bitten every day at the set by the cockatoo. and they're like,
it's a hazard.
I know, they become, you know, sometimes what's sad is they become fads, but, you know, they've discovered through research that it's much healthier for people to have pets for the ones they don't, because, you know, talk about an ego booster every time you come home.
Oh, unconditional love, and just the fact that it's life. I think, you know, just like in the paranormal, you know, it's, you know, we're all part of the same cycle, and, you know, animals don't have a voice. We have to give them that voice, and, you know, I think my biggest, you know, bugaboo is the cruelty that people put on animals because they are so innocent and are put on earth as we are, you know, for different purposes, but for the same reason, to be living and to one day pass on. And it's just the cycle of life. So, you know, but yeah, they just know what their environment is. So, you know, like for instance, with the breeds of dogs that are horrible, like pit bulls, quote unquote, well, it's not the animal, it's the human, as Caesar Millan says, you know. Of course, I love him. I'm not a pack leader. Not happening. So I fail, epic fail. Good ghost hunter, bad pack leader. But, you know, it's the human. It's not the animal.
Right. It's the environment that they're raised in. We're kind of seeing it now with their inner city here in Indianapolis. They've had 5 shootings in 5 nights. And I think been 4 or 5 have been fatalities. And it's basically these young men that had no mentor or father figure.
Yeah.
Because that's what's really breaking down our society. It's quite sad. It's almost like we have a war going on in our cities that's, you know, the urban war that probably more kids are shot this day here in the United States, each other, gangs or whatever, than soldiers that die in Afghanistan.
Yeah. Oh, it's disgusting. It's just human life, you know. I mean, that's what it comes down to, respect, you know.
Absolutely does.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard so much about your dad. I have to confess, in fact, several people that I talked to that I told them that you were going to be on the show and who your father was. And right away they said, oh, he was the one that really brought credibility to, well, I guess we call it ghost hunting. What is the scientific term for it?
You know, it's physical research.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's trying to get some kind of physical data to prove the existence that we go somewhere after we leave our body. And that's
mm-hmm.
really all that it is, you know. And it's a very basic formula of trying to understand why are we here, where do we go when we die. And that's really what he was all about. The stuff you see nowadays is just taken like 20 million different directions, confuses a lot of people thinking what is the field, but it's physical research. And you're combining data using scientific methods and using more metaphysical methods and combining all your tools to try to prove, disprove, or not have any proof, but you can't disprove it, whether or not life exists after death.
So what's your opinion of mediums?
Well, here's the thing. You know, everybody has the ability to be an intuitive, which is basically utilizing your sixth sense. So we all see, you know, that film Sixth Sense, you know, with the actor Haley Joel Osment, you know, and you know, I see dead people. It's cute, it's funny, but it's true.
Uh-huh.
When you have your sixth sense, you know, you have your typical five senses. We do have a sixth sense. It's like that third eye in the middle of your forehead, you know, and we tap into another world that we're connected to, and that's the spirit world. And some of us can connect and some of us can't. And that's really what a medium is. And there are some that just have the ability to see beyond the obvious, communicate with the other side to give information to those in need and deliver messages. And there's different types of mediums. You have those that go on cases, like with my father, to help talk to the ghost in need who couldn't cross and was creating a disturbance, which is what he did. And then you have those that can kind of read your future, if you will. And those are more what we call psychics. But there's 20 different labels to it. You know, it all comes to the point of you're able to go into that next realm and go beyond the human ability of communication.
I've always said the same thing about people's ability with telepathy.
Yeah.
Especially
with EFT, yeah.
Yeah, especially a couple that's been married for many, many years, and they'll be driving their car down the road, and they'll start a conversation. They've both been thinking about the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's more apparent in animals.
Yep.
I mean, they have...
Well, animals, they know.
Yes. I mean, they can look each other in the eye, and they'll take off and go in the same direction. I mean, how do these birds know how to migrate?
Yeah.
I mean, if there wasn't some sort of telepathic power going on.
Well, that's a really great point. And a lot of people in the paranormal field, especially of today, don't even consider animals as part of a great example of how they communicate and what method when they are migrating and when they find one another, or they just know how to guide themselves through for survival. You know, there is something to be said about utilizing that sixth sense. And animals, you know, it's like that whole thing of where, you know, you've got the frightened couple, they hear things in the house and they're thinking, oh my God, is it haunted? And the cat looks up and sees the ghost before they even realize they have a ghost. You know, they just like when they hear thunder before we do, they have that extrasensory perception of tapping into what's about to happen. And part of like with like thunderstorms, that's nature. So is spirits and ghosts, you know. It's all part of nature, and animals tap into all of that, you know. I mean, it's just you know, they have that heightened sense, you know. But if we heighten up our senses and learn to be more aware, we can also tap in as well.
Have you had dealings with animal spirits?
What I've had is the animals I've lost have come to me, which was very comforting. You know, I think depending on the person, you know, it, you know, my father, he had a beautiful white cat that as a boy he remembered one day, you know, he was walking and there was this cat following him and he kept turning around and there was no cat and he even knew that. He's like, ah, it's the ghost cat, you know. So, but he knew, like, it wasn't a big deal. And for me, they'll come to me in a dream to show me that they're okay and they look great and that they're not the way they were when they died, and then that's it. And it to me it was like euphoric because I reconnected to a part of the family that we were still grieving over, and it's happened to me a few times. So yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, somebody would in the family that would come to you in a dream. So did the pets, you know.
I have now. People say that I'm crazy. I've had this happen. Needless to say, after working with animals for 40 years, I've had to bury a few. But like to see them out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, you see, like apparitions, right? You saw
right.
them.
Yes.
But you know they're gone, and you know you're not crazy,
mm-hmm.
right? So how do you explain it?
Yeah,
that's to be determined.
I have nothing to say on that.
Yeah, don't. But I was telling you when we talked earlier, we're going to get into some of the stuff that you're working on. But on our property, we have 3 Indian burial mounds.
Nice.
It is. And several years ago, I was a clear different part of the property, and I looked up toward our house, and we had, during one of our animal buildings, I saw this woman who looked like a Native American, but she was entirely dressed in denim. And I thought, oh, we have company. And
wow.
I ran through the woods and got to my house in about 10 minutes, and I asked my wife, I said, who's here? She says, nobody. Oh, no, I saw a gal standing over there by the animal building. No, there's nobody here. And I can remember that as if it happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just...
But it happened because, you know, you encountered it. And the thing is that what my father did was you don't discredit somebody's story because they saw and they experienced and you didn't, so therefore they're lying, and then there goes the skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
If people need to learn to be open because it's nature and it's part of life and it's a cycle. Some of us experience it, some of us don't, you know.
Well, my brother had friends who they lived in a house in north side of Indianapolis that they had several things go on, and
mm-hmm.
he came home one night and his wife came out and told him what she had seen, and
mm-hmm.
he laughed at her, and she literally beat the windshield out of his car with her fist.
Oh my.
Yeah, she was so upset that he would not believe what she was telling him.
Mm.
So our guest tonight, Alexandra Holzer, we're talking ghosts, everybody. It's going to be a fantastic hour. It already has been. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. Only you
can prevent wildfires.
We're Rascal Flats. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
We'll be back with Alexandra Holzer in just a couple of moments. We want to remind everyone that this half of the program is brought to you by McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful, scenic Estes Park, Colorado, right on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. Folks, if you've never been west and had a chance to see the Rockies, you're really missing out, and what a great place to plan your vacation. Go to their website, www.mcgregormountainlodge.com. Michael Hodges is the proprietor, and it's an absolutely wonderful place. My wife and I have a cabin that when we have the opportunity to go out there, they save that cabin for us. We've seen bighorn sheep in our backyard, a mule deer. It's absolutely spectacular. It's rather spiritual, I would say. And plan your vacation, please, because if you've never had the opportunity to go to West, you need to do that. I want to tell everyone that next week on our program, Gary Lewis will be with us, son of Jerry Lewis. You know, remember from the 60s, Gary Lewis and the Playboys are on a big tour with the Turtles and Paul Revere and the Raiders and doing a lot of the fairs. But Gary Lewis, we'll be talking to him right here on Larry Batson's Wild World. And he has a brand new album coming out with Sony of a live performance, so we'll be listening to parts of that. Our guest tonight, her dad was the original ghost hunter, Hans Holzer. She's taken up in his legacy and carried on with his work, and it sounds like she's doing one heck of a job with it. Alexandra Holzer's talking to us from her home, and it's a pleasure to have you on the program, Alexandra.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Larry.
When did you first become aware of what your dad did for a living?
Sadly, I was just probably a few years old, just like he was when he started out on talking about ghosts and spirits and things. I was just as young because the environment, like we were talking about, was my environment, completely surrounded with everything from, you know, the occult to the paranormal in my home. So I grew up in a living museum. So I already knew. Yeah, I mean, I knew, you know, and you know, I knew that Daddy was weird. And so, you know, so, and plus, you know, my mother worked with him for, you know, a good part of the investigations, and she was an artist and a creative, and her mother was with us a lot, and she was Parisian, and she was very psychic, and so everybody kind of had, like, three eyeballs, do you know what I mean? It wasn't like I had any normalcy. So I knew, like, when I was, like, five or six, but the first time I really knew who he was and that there was something really to this was when my mother would give away his books for Christmas to my teachers as a present, and I would have to go in and with these heavy wrapped things. I didn't really know. I didn't care. I didn't pay attention. And I went to private school back then, so things were just very different. And they'd open it up, and you'd see witches, one book, ghosts, another book, you know. And then it just like the kids kind of looked at me like, what the heck is wrong with her? And the teachers would be, like, really into it, you know?
Yeah.
And I just sank lower and lower in my chair, like, please, somebody, just take me now. It's over. My life is over. oh, my God, I'll never come back here again.
Yeah.
That's what it was like.
So how young were you? I assume he took you when he did his research ever?
Well, a lot of the stuff he did at home I kind of was, you know, peeking in and out of because he traveled so much when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the casework that he did, and, you know, mind you, this is before TV crews and stuff like that where they put you up at these, you know, four-star hotels.
Sure.
My father would, you know, travel the world, you know, from America to Europe, investigating claims and stories and people, and he would hook up with the medium in tow from those areas. So he would work with many different mediums, you know, dependent on where he would be and
mm-hmm.
who he felt comfortable with and who was really good at what they did. And that's kind of how he did his work, but he kind of went himself. He had his own camera.
Mm-hmm.
If he met with people that were photographers, historians, that kind of thing, researchers, they'd all meet maybe in England to cover some castles and some private residences, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he was away a lot when I was growing up, and in my teens, he kind of settled more at home and did a lot of lectures and venues more locally at that point. And so I was always kind of part of his environment because he invited it home, too. So you couldn't escape it, you know. And we had it was terrible. I mean, he even rented they actually purchased it, I'm sorry. There's a house in Vienna, Austria, which is where he was from.
Mm-hmm.
And they got this farmhouse that my mother was supposed to renovate because my father and a hammer didn't get along, you know. Like, he just did no work around the house, you know.
Just,
yeah, he didn't even try.
That.
Yeah, that was typing, great. Hammering,
yeah.
Not good.
Yeah, okay.
So my mother was kind of like the man in the marriage, if you will, and she would renovate this farmhouse that turned out to be haunted and nobody knew. So it was just like, great, Dad, thanks. So, but growing up, it was always like this whirlwind of wherever we went, the house was haunted, people would come over, they were weird. So even though I was too young to go out with him, you know, it was always in my home anyway, so.
Sure. So what, excuse my ignorance, but what year did the Amityville, that's a tongue twister.
It's a curse.
Yes, it is.
The Amityville Horror?
That, yes. Thank you.
That one. Well, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, those on the East Coast and in the New York area have heard about this horrible case that happened over 30-plus years ago in Amityville, Long Island, which is a really beautiful boating town,
mm-hmm.
like many parts of Long Island, all on the water and really quite lovely. And, you know, this family was very corrupt and dysfunctional, and they moved into this home, and the son murdered his family. And, you know, so basically my father had read about the case in the New York Times, like everybody else. And, you know, at the time there was no reason for him to be involved because it was a homicide. You know, it was just a murder case. But
right.
As the years went on, there were claims that the house had problems and it was haunted because with his work, you know, when there's a tragic death or sudden loss of life is a prime spot in real estate for a ghost. You know, a.k.a. a haunting.
Sure.
So that's why he was called out. And he was called out to investigate, and he chose a very well-known psychic, Ethel Johnson Mayers, an older woman, very seasoned, to go out and start to find out what happened in that home
mm-hmm.
on the paranormal perspective. So they found out, you know, he had interviewed the town's librarian. He met with all sorts of officials there. He was very respectful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he met with detectives, he met with people who knew the family. You know, it was a very thorough case. It took a long time, and that's what the books were, you know, that he wrote about murder in Amityville, the Amityville curse, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so it tells the story of what the psychic picked up and the Indian burial grounds that were all out in Long Island. You know, that's kind of, you know, the Indians settled there. I mean, all the names are Indian, Montauk, Amagansett, these are Indian names, tribes. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So there was a lot of that to the story, and that the house itself wasn't haunted. It was because of the crime scene that occurred in that home that created the haunted environment. And he was very staunch in trying to explain to people. It became a haunting after the murders took place.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what was his thoughts about it? I mean...
Well,
is this one of the best?
He you know, I mean, obviously it's a horrible case because, you know, Ronald DeFeo shoots his parents and his siblings, and, you know, we have him on you know, being recorded, because my father did a documentary and
mm-hmm.
filmed him called Murder in Amityville.
Mm-hmm.
That basically, you've got Ronnie saying, I was talking about not really liking his father. It was no secret that he and his father, Big Ronnie, had a tumultuous relationship. They hated each other. There was abuse going on in that family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, you know, the very good Catholic family, the wife doesn't say anything. God knows what went on, you know. And her father, the father-in-law, the grandfather to Ronnie, had money, bought this house in Amityville for the family. There was a lot of resentment. And the son who did the murders didn't like the grandfather, didn't like his own father. There was a lot of bad blood. And plus, you know, he did drugs and, you know, quote-unquote, no pun, maybe.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, fast forward to today, it's like you have to kind of have some levity at this point, because the whole thing was, you know, it reeked of drugs, abuse, dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you basically kind of, you know, put something on that breeds a negative environment. So, in hindsight, you know, my father was you know, very disgusted at what happened, but he truly believed that through the research with the medium and what they found out and what the testimonial was, that he was possessed.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, my father's theory, which spawned the film,
mm-hmm.
Amityville 2, The Possession. And so the theory was that he was taken over by this angry chief spirit, an Indian chief spirit, which, by the way, he interviewed the local historian who went on record on film with my father saying, I don't believe in all this, and I don't think that's the cause, but yes, there was a skeleton found near the property, and we know it was, an Indian chief because of the way it was buried standing up, because that's how they would bury them when they were heads of, you know, state or whatever, they were the chief.
Mm-hmm.
So they had that burial that way. So it really fascinates you on what he found out, what he believed, and what, you know, he concluded for that time. So there's a lot of Indian influence and negativity and angry spirits involved that, you know, took part in what had happened.
While you're talking,
crazy,
I'm thinking, how do the Amish feel about this? Do you know?
The Amish?
Uh-huh.
I have no clue.
Here's why I say this.
Okay. I really don't know. Yeah.
The school in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
where the guy walked in and murdered all those children?
Yes, I do.
And
yeah.
And you know what they did with the school after that happened?
They burned it down?
They leveled it, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that breeds. See, it's like with anything else. You know, when there's a horrific happening,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's all these murders, like 9/11, you know, if I go down to, you know, the World Trade Center,
sure.
they have the Freedom Towers. You know, my whole theory and belief as a researcher is that all these lost souls, if you will, that died tragically,
sure.
you know, there's going to be some residual. There's going to be an impression. See, we leave impressions like a carbon, you know, copy on Earth. And
mm-hmm.
so that's the same kind of thing, and it's tragedy breeds tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing with Amityville, you know, and the claims that there were sightings of this, you know, one of the sons appearing and, you know, faces and in the window and stuff. But the sad thing about Amityville, which it spawned thereafter, you had, you know, kids throughout the years going on the front lawn and you know, claiming it's the devil is there and reenacting stuff. And I think, which is really scary, was these two boys that had committed this stupid act on the property several years ago, I think one ended up in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
the other one got really sick. So
wow.
it's kind of like, yeah, so do you know what I mean? So it's like
yeah.
my father had said the land was bad, the property was bad, it was a negative environment of what was there before. Putting a house on top of it just doesn't, you know, it's what happens right in that moment on that spot. The house has nothing to do with it. Crazy.
Yeah, and I think you've been to the World Trade Center spot.
You know, I went a lot as a kid, and then when I was older, my mother had worked for Equitable Life back in the day. And, you know, they had their offices in the building, and I didn't even realize getting out of the subway and going up into the Grand Concourse into these beautiful stores when you go in. Oh, Mommy works here. This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, she was an interior designer back then, and I didn't know what I was in. And then after when 9/11 happened, all those memories kept flooding back in as a New Yorker, a native New Yorker.
Sure.
You know, I just completely was like, oh, my God. Just devastating beyond. And so I haven't been back. You know, that part just is so sad. So sad.
The reason I ask is do you know people that are mediums or so forth that have been there and have picked up things?
I've spoken to quite a few people that some were mediums and some were just, you know, generally, you know, just colleagues in different professions, and all felt a sense of deep sadness, loss, as if they had been the ones in the tragedy. It's almost like there's an energy there that pulls you in, and you get caught up in the sadness, you know, and I feel that, you know, with the Freedom Towers and things like that, I'm just waiting, if not already, and it just hasn't come out, of a story, if they start opening up offices there of somebody claiming to see a plane come at them or somebody walking down the hallway thinking they're going to their cubicle and they disappear, you know,
wow.
Waiting for that, yeah, which is what would happen.
Yeah.
They had the in the crash in Pennsylvania when that plane went down. There was a couple of guards in a trailer that were guarding the area just after the crash because they were still, you know, it was still a crime scene.
Mm.
And there was a story of one of the police officers, if you will, or night guards, had seen something in the field, and they kind of backed up towards the trailer because they seemed a bit frightened because what was coming at them was a woman. They described what she was wearing, what she looked like, and she seemed lost. She didn't notice the guard. She just kind of looked like she was looking around, like, where is she? And he had panicked and got into the trailer and closed the door, and he was telling his partner, and I think within a few minutes, somebody knocked on the trailer. It just gets you thinking, like, can you imagine? I mean, what would happen, you know?
You know, I've never really told anybody about this before, but before that had happened, I remember one night walking around here where I live, you know, just doing chores and so forth, and I saw an airplane flying into a building, and it was weird. And then when it happened, it would go, you know, it was almost like I was watching a videotape. It was weird.
Yeah.
There
is a lot of weird things that people can't explain. You don't have to be a physical researcher, which is, you know, obviously my father was, it was a full-time job for him. It was not like he had a day job. He lived and breathed life and life after death and everything in between. There is something to be said when you have, and there's tons and tons of beautiful books written on, you know, experiences from people just like yourself. You're not in the field, but you have these experiences. Not to discredit it, to say, listen, you know, I'm a normal average person and I think I just saw a UFO. Well, what does that mean? You know, and then you have, you know, sightings where you'll have a group of people and they all see it. And how do you explain that? And none of them are in the same job. You know, they don't hang out all the time. It's just you have a group of people experiencing something. And this happens throughout our world time and time again throughout the ages. And what's so frustrating is I wish people would just be more open-minded to the possibility that there are things around us that are greater than we can even imagine, that we're so small.
Yeah.
These things do happen. And, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. We're on the same page.
Oh, yeah.
What's the most interesting case you worked on?
Me? Oh,
yeah.
Boy. I haven't done enough, to be honest with you. I mean, I'd love to say, oh, I've done this and that, because I know a lot of people in the field today think that, you know, well, I've got 150 under my belt. That makes me, you know, usually the guys on the shows that kind of get the opportunities to travel because
right.
It's not on their dime. Do you know what I mean? I don't have the luxury
to
be sent everywhere, which is kind of what I was hoping in my near future to do, you know, doing casework. But I do a lot of local work, and there's a lot of history where I live in New York, and opening up to the Hudson Valley in New York. And there's a lot of stuff that my father covered up here that I didn't realize because he wrote so much on so many cases. I have to relearn where he was.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been backtracking where he went and going to some places that he went to. And one of the places, of course, everybody knows Gettysburg.
Sure.
Again, it's like 9/11 where you walk into this immense energy zone. I got so sick, Larry, when I got off the train. I got picked up and driven to my hotel. And the minute I got there, I was sick to my stomach. Absolutely sick. I couldn't get rid of it. I had a migraine attack.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lecture and a tour for a weekend, and I couldn't feel better no matter what I did. I saw things. I saw apparitions. I, you know, was in a haunted environment, and things were moving around me, and I could hear whispers in my ear, and I was completely freaked out. Because it's like, how do you document all that, you know? So it was a lot of that, and I felt like no matter where I would go, no matter what case I would do, I know that I'm going to experience these things because it's an energy pull. And so I've done a lot of, like, local because it's where I live, so it makes
sure.
sense to help the people around me.
Mm-hmm.
My next-door neighbor, I've been, you know, back and forth helping her. She's lost people, and they seem to visit her home a lot, and it's right there, you know? So it's like,
sure.
okay, I'll be over tonight. We'll talk to some dead people, and then I'll call it a night. No biggie. Yeah,
did your father go with you?
My father is with me, yeah. It is the funniest thing because I said, who else can say that the ghost hunter himself has come back to help his ghost hunting daughter
mm-hmm.
ghost hunt? I mean, it's just the funniest thing. It's a paradox. But he comes to me in dreams. Sometimes it takes me a while to figure out what the dream was because we forget, and if we don't write down what that dream was, we kind of lose it.
Mm-hmm.
We would get bits and pieces of what the messages are, and, you know, then I have him recorded talking, and that freaks me out. And then I feel him. So I know I'm never alone, and I almost feel like I'm being guided, so wherever I go, I'm okay. You know, I've been pushed. I've been in prisons that are haunted, obviously, and I've been pushed and touched. And for some reason, what you would think you would react, you don't. Like, for me, I just turned around and I said, back off. Don't touch me.
Yeah.
And I went on. I'm really not afraid. It's amazing.
And you can, and I just know this from experience, you can feel them come up behind you.
You know something's coming. You
yeah.
know. And you can have, I've had a group of 30 people around me. Everybody's chit-chatting, and then they get all quiet. And if they're not, then I tell them, quiet, shut up. We need to focus now, people. And they're probably older than me, half of them. But I go, listen, I'm teaching this right now, you know. And all of a sudden, there's a wave of stillness. And it's
yeah.
dark, and there's no lights because you're in an abandoned place, and it's creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a stillness before, or the calm before the storm, and it comes right up behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And you turn to your left or to your right, and you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then they hover up above you, and they move all around you. And when you have some equipment that's sensitive to the energy, and it goes off and it shows you readings, and not EMF readers, but I'm talking about like really good digital recorders, and they have other things, millimeters, and, you know, when you're filming it, you know, you piece it together after. So there's no real time yet where we can kind of communicate one-on-one unless you're a great psychic,
mm-hmm.
and they're, like, spitting out stuff, but then you have to go back to your recordings, like my father did, and put everything, oh, my God, you know, it says, my name is Larry, and then the psychic said that in the session, but you don't get to hear that until you go through the recordings, and then you match it up saying, oh, my God, this all happened. And we have this tool and that tool, and they all correlate. But you know you're not alone.
It's almost, how can I describe it? It's almost like the air feels like you're walking through cotton candy. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, it does. Like cotton, they say it's almost like spider webs.
Mm-hmm.
You feel... You know, and again, you can do this during the day. If you know, like, you know, if you go to Gettysburg and you're walking through one of the battlefields and it's daytime, you are not alone. You
mm-hmm.
might walk right through a soldier that's passing through because he's looking for his group. He doesn't realize he's dead, hence a ghost, or he doesn't want to
mm-hmm.
leave, hence a ghost, you know. It is cobwebby. Definitely is a
yeah.
sensation of cobwebs on your face
mm-hmm.
and on your hands. There is also a sense of very dead air, and then it gets really cold really quick.
Yeah.
And we call that spirit cold. Yeah.
I can't even imagine what it would be like to go to the Custer Battlefield in South Dakota.
Ooh, there's so many, though, all over. I mean, it's if you think about it, everywhere where we've had loss of life like that, especially like that, where these men just kind of, they went down.
Yeah.
You know, it just, yeah. I mean, where I live, they fought over where we are. We're in the Hudson Valley in New York. So you've got a lot of death over here. And when we first were looking to buy our home, I had seen a soldier, half of him anyway. I don't know if it was the good half, but... So, yeah, I saw half, and, you know, I saw this, you know, uniform, which I wasn't familiar with, because as much as I am a huge history buff, I love history. Mm-hmm. I think we should always learn things that we don't know, past, present, and future. I couldn't place the ranking, you know, so I needed help on that. But I wouldn't have known on my own, you know, I didn't study it. So
sure.
I knew where we were. This was kind of sacred, too. You know.
How did your husband feel about it?
You know, listen, who cares? You know, my life half, you know, gosh darn it.
That's right.
But, you know, he has no choice. But, you know, he's definitely skeptic in the sense of he hasn't had his own experience, but he's a believer because I know things that I couldn't have possibly known.
Sure.
And I've helped his mother tremendously, and she's a believer, and, you know, her dead sister came to me several years ago, which opened up Pandora's box for me there. And I just know things. I'm also like a medical intuitive. I can see through people and see if their blood pressure is off, if they need to go on meds, if there's something going on with their heart or lungs. And I don't know. I didn't ask for it. You know, it's just there. But it's not, it's to help. It's not like, you know, go on my website and say, okay, this is what we're doing. I mean, it's just a natural thing for me as I grow as a human being. But yeah, he's a believer because I've just, you know, said things before they've happened,
mm-hmm.
and then they happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm like, I told you,
yeah.
You know, but I digress. You know, I don't throw too much of it out there in his face, just a little.
Yeah. You probably can tell by his mood for the day, whether I need to tell him what's happened today or.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's
conservative.
Well, yeah, that's my wife is the same way. My interest in the legend of Bigfoot or Sasquatch, she just hates it. So it's like,
well, you know, where we are, they think Bigfoot's up here too. And I'll tell you, I'm not eager to run out and look for a big 10-foot smelly hairy dude. It's just not my goal in life. But people come up not far from where we are, up in the mountains, and looking for him. And listen, hey, if he wants to come down, we have some Corona beer. Maybe he wants one, and I'll make something for him, some pasta. I don't know. Like, what do they eat?
Yeah.
Just leave the dogs and children alone. It's all good.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, it's all good. So.
Well, Alexander, we just did not have enough time tonight. Gosh, this is so fascinating.
Thank you.
I was thinking beforehand, I feel so ignorant on the subject, but after you've talked about it a little bit, I said,
yeah, it makes it a little easier to understand.
Yeah.
Good, I'm glad. Good, that's my purpose.
Now,
thank you.
Now, we have, Larry and I have a story. When we were working on a project in an old building, we used to be a pet shop that he ran for many years. We had some strange things happen in that building.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
We had
a
letter that came for the owner that had passed away like 12 years before. And we didn't want to open it, so we would set it on a counter, and we'd come in the next day and it would be somewhere else in the building.
Yeah.
We found it all over the building. It would move.
Yeah. I believe it.
There were a lot of strange noises. When we first cleaned the place out, the owner was an alcoholic, and there were empty bottles in the drawers and the cabinets and under, just everywhere. We had cleaned them all out, cleaned everything out, and for weeks we kept finding empty liquor bottles.
Well.
Oh, you're kidding.
Mm-mm. Yeah, he would. One night I was in there working late by myself, and I was running an air compressor, and all of a sudden somebody started beating on the floor from the basement. And the basement was a place we did not go at night.
That's correct.
Nobody ever goes into the basement.
You'd go down there, I mean, I think at that time I had 50 species of venomous snakes that I kept in a room above the basement. And
wow.
I would go in that room in a heartbeat. Go in the basement,
but not in
the dark.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know why? Because the horror film set it up so you don't go in the basement. See, I go right to the basement, but
oh.
I won't go by the snakes. So.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
What a great show, Dr. Day.
Yes, I know. I was excited. In fact, I could hardly speak through the whole show because I was learning so much.
Me too. Alexander,
cool.
If you ever have an hour in your life that you would spend with us again, we definitely would like
sure.
to have you back
oh.
on.
Absolutely. I would love it. Thank you both so much for having me.
Oh, we hope you had a great time because it's...
Absolutely.
We love to make friends. We want to tell everybody next week on the program, Gary Lewis, he's coming back. He's a pretty good guy, so it should be a great show. Remember, you can listen to all of our shows and archives, including this one tonight for the next half hour. Folks, you've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Alexandra.
Thank you both so much. Have a good night.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.